Hello, I'm Frank Colzo. This is number 0127, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0127. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Christy Whitman, who is the co-author of Taming Your Alpha Bitch, How to Be Fierce and Feminine and Get Everything You Want.
There's really no role models of what it means to be fierce and feminine, to be able to go for what you want, create what you want, but do it in a very feminine, loving, very relaxed, allowing space instead of being forceful, aggressive, underhanded, bitchy, catty, you know, and that's really not the way to go about things because, you know, we're overwhelmed, we're stressed, and at the end of the day, we're feeling very unfulfilled. We may get the position, we may get the guy, we may get whatever it is we want, but at the end of the day, we're not happy.
Don Aslett is the founder of the Museum of Clean. How do you come up with an idea for a museum like this?
I really love Clean and I love how it changes life. And Clean is really, really a hard sell. You know, people punish their kids with it. Like, you know, you little snot behavior, you're going to clean your room. Professors punish their students. Say, you know, your kids either are study or you're going to grow up and be a janitor. So, I don't know. I was at a museum in Detroit, I think, and I saw a pre-electric sweeper in 1890. And I go, man, there's cow museums, horse museums, plane museums, train museums. Why not a clean museum? The most important factor in Earth is clean for the environment, for the people.
And Stuart Nullman is along with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, this is Stuart Nullman. We travel back in time with Stephen King and his latest book, 112263. As well, I'll take a look back at some other King novels that you should check out. All that coming back at you on the Stuff File Program.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0127, was Frank Colzo, who is an entrepreneur and a listener of the show in Amsterdam, in the Netherlands, and somebody I knew way, way back when. Thank you very much, Frank, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? We start off with a story from Auckland, New Zealand. 35-year-old David Ilolahia was arrested after flying into a rage at a local Wendy's restaurant because the staff got his order wrong. But the real story here may be in the actual order itself. David ordered a Baconator with no bacon, a fish burger, and a triple combo. He says, they gave me a big classic, the Baconator was correct, and the fish burger was chicken. He admits he lost his temper when he went back inside the store to complain to the manager, who he says blew him off. But he also admitted to calling her some very derogatory terms, saying they weren't polite words. I called her a homosexual and the B word and an F word and an A word. He then pushed over a computer screen on the counter so the staff locked themselves in the office for safety and called police. When police arrived, David started a scuffle with them, and one officer emptied a can of pepper spray into his eyes with amazingly little effect. David was then smacked across the head twice with a baton before other officers helped to restrain and arrest him. Still, despite his admissions of rage and physical violence, David says he is shocked, shocked at the reaction of police and doesn't understand why he was treated like that. Really? He's since been banned from that particular Wendy's, but says the incident has not affected his taste for Wendy's food. He's due to be back in court next week. Again, can someone explain why you would order a Baconator with no bacon? Isn't that like ordering a triple burger with no meat? Really, I don't understand. Anyway, if you want a clear definition of a person hitting rock bottom, then go no further than Burbank, California, where police arrested Khadija Basir, who was seen opening customers' car doors in McDonald's at the drive-thru and offering sexual favors in exchange for chicken McNuggets. Yes, police were called, and Ms. Basir was arrested on suspicion of prostitution. You know, I really do love McNuggets, but I have my limits as to exactly what I would do for McNuggets. That's all I'm saying. Okay, don't know if you know it or not, but apparently Barbie dolls are a major threat to the Iranian way of life. As a result, Iran's morality police are cracking down on the sale of the iconic dolls to protect the public from what they see as the evil Western culture eroding Islamic values. Even as the West imposes the toughest ever sanctions on Iran and tensions rise over its nuclear program, inside the country, the Barbie ban is part of what the government calls a soft war against decadent cultural influences. Iran's religious rulers first declared Mattel's Barbie un-Islamic back in 1996, citing its destructive cultural and social consequences. Wow, it's a doll. Do they know that? Despite the ban, the doll has been sold openly in Tehran shops, that is, until now. The new order, issued around 3 weeks ago, forced shopkeepers to hide the leggy, busty blonde behind other toys as a way of meeting public or popular demand for the dolls while avoiding being closed down by the police. Well, you know, looks to me like Mattel is missing out on a huge marketing opportunity here. Hasn't anyone considered producing Hijab Barbie? Just asking. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest on the program, a former sailor has been awarded $5 million an inch over some most unfortunate injuries he sustained in an accident. Back in 2007, 27-year-old Matthew Wall was riding his motorcycle to work at the U.S. Navy submarine base in San Diego when he was hit by a shuttle bus from a nearby car dealership. The jury heard how the van turned left in front of Mr. Wall, who was unable to avoid the collision and was thrown off his motorcycle and suffered a fracture of his penis rambus bone. Ow, and a crushing injury to his private parts, causing nerve and artery damage. He had to undergo reconstructive surgery that left the family jewels an inch and a half shorter than before the accident. Even worse, the van's driver, Pedro Flores Miramontes, was a non-U.S. citizen who had an expired driver's license and had never been trained as a shuttle driver. Oh, it still gets worse. At the time of the accident, Mr. Wall was a newlywed and recently married. However, questions arose about whether he would be able to have children due to his injury, and the couple have since divorced. A jury in California awarded Wall $7,553,000 in damages as compensation for pain, suffering, medical bills, and loss of income. A spokesman for the car dealership say, they will appeal the verdict. So do the math, folks. That's $5 million an inch. There you go. Okay, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Christy Whitman is one of the co-authors of Taming Your Alpha Bitch, How to Be Fierce and Feminine and Get Everything You Want. She joins us on the line from California. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the show with us.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, right off the bat, very controversial title for some folks.
Yes.
Does it make it difficult to get press? I mean, you're talking to us, but we're an online program. Does it make it difficult to get press when some people might have a problem with the title?
You know, some people might, but we're going on the Today Show on January 30th, so I'm saying no. A lot of the press actually like the title.
Who is your book written for? And by that I mean, let me rephrase that question. Are men allowed to read it? And would they get anything from it?
Yeah, men actually will get a lot out of it, because if they do have a woman in their lives that tends to be a little alpha bitchy, and I'll describe what that is in a minute, it helps them learn how to handle them, how to relate to them better. They also may have a boss that's an alpha bitch, a wife, a sister, a mother, a cousin, and it really helps them understand not just, you know, what the woman's going through, but better how to relate to that woman.
Okay, so define alpha bitch.
Well, it's really that woman that always has to be one up. She has to be the one in charge. We like to say that there's four behaviors that make a woman an alpha bitch, and that is if she's very forceful, So it's almost like a bull in a china shop. She, instead of, you know, being standing in her own power, she's just very forceful. It's like the one in charging to the hostess stand, you know, trying to get the best table. She's very forceful. We also have the woman's very controlling. She always has to be right. Her way is the only way. And she will organize and orchestrate everything. And if something goes a little bit out of plan, she completely flies off the handle. So there's the controlling one. There's the competitive one. No matter what she does, she's always constantly comparing herself and competing with everybody around her, whether it be at work, she's comparing her children to somebody else's children. She's even competing with her partner. So she's always very competitive. And the fourth is that she's very drama queen. She's very attention-seeking. She has to be the loudest, has to be doing the, you know, look at me type of behavior. So it really becomes all about her, and so that the attention becomes, you know, on her, really.
Now, the qualities you just described, the four different types, if those qualities showed up in men, and they do, is it necessarily considered a negative? In other words, is there a double standard here?
There really is. And the reason is because, you know, men and women, as just an example with competition, men and women compete very differently. If a man is at work and he's competing for a position at work and there's only one, you know, job promotion that's available, they'll compete. They'll you know, do what they need to do to compete for this position. But women make it very personal. They make it about, oh, her butt's bigger than mine, or she's, you know, what her children are doing. I mean, it becomes very catty, very, very personal, whereas men, they leave everything on the playing field. And that's the issue, and that's really why Rebecca and I wrote this book, is that, you know, women have come to a place where we feel that to have power and to create the success and the life that we want, we really had no role models of what it was to be fierce and feminine. It was like our role models of what powerful, you know, what power meant was men. And where competition and, you know, being forceful and doing all those things is a very masculine trait, you know, it's time to go beyond what we've learned because it's not working for us women anymore.
So getting back to the first part of your title, how do you tame it?
You know, it's really about, we talk about ways to, keys that unlock each and every one. So each chapter in the book is like from force to power, from competition to collaboration. It's really moving from a very masculine approach to a very feminine approach, which is actually very powerful. So, you know, you get more done in less time, but you do it from a very elegant and relaxed and easy way of doing things instead of pushing and forcing and competing.
So in reading your book, and again, I go back to the male side of things, does this help a guy? First of all, does this help women who work with and for other women? Does this help guys who work with and for other women?
Oh, absolutely. And anybody that has any type of relationship with someone that has any of those type of behaviors, you know, it really helps them understand why. And the fact is that whenever a woman is coming from those places, they're really in fear. And the fear is based in lack, that they're not good enough, that there's not enough to go around. It's really coming from a place of, you know, of lack and limitation. And so if you understand that, you'll learn how to better relate with her. And we give a lot of examples. We break it down in each different behavior, you know, how this woman shows up at work. So if she's your boss, coworker, even if she's your employee, or, she, you know, how she shows up as a mother, how she shows up in a relationship, and how she shows up as a friend.
Is part of the problem we in the media, do we not perpetrate this stereotype? I'm thinking of things like, well, reality shows, for instance. You have the Real Housewives, and we seem to celebrate that type of behavior on TV, and that works its way into everyday life. So, you know, young girls say, that's the kind of personality that I want to be because it gets me where I want to go.
That's exactly it, and that's what we're talking about. It's like there's really no role models of what it means to be fierce and feminine, to be able to go for what you want, create what you want, but do it in a very feminine, loving, very relaxed, allowing space instead of being forceful, aggressive, underhanded, bitchy, catty, you know, and that's really not the way to go about things because, you know, we're overwhelmed. We're stressed, and at the end of the day, we're feeling very unfulfilled. We may get the position, we may get the guy, we may get whatever it is we want, but at the end of the day, we're not happy. there's more and more women on, you know, antidepressants, they're stressed, they're overwhelmed. And even when they do achieve what they want, it's like it's so empty, they try to go for the next thing. And life becomes a series of just strive, 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 I'm unhappy. Okay, so if I go get this next thing, then maybe finally I'll be happy. When in case, that's really not the case.
Okay, so you mentioned role models. Can you give us any examples of people who you would say exemplify what you're talking about in a good way?
Absolutely. You know, Goldie Hawn is a perfect example of a woman that's fierce and feminine. She goes for what she wants. She's created a lot of success in her life, but she's very feminine in the way she does it. She's not forceful, aggressive. She's a very connected and loving woman. A woman now, if you think of like the new generation coming up, is you look at someone like a Beyonce. She's created wild success for her. She has really success in all aspects of her life. She goes for what she wants. She's fantastic. People love her. And she really is that, you know, that role model for young kids and even, you know, adults to emulate.
Okay, using Beyonce as an example, there's somebody who comes from a family where her father was her manager and a guiding force, but her mother was also a very, very strong figure and an independent woman in her own right.
Yes, so, absolutely. She had a great role model because her mother is very fierce and feminine.
The book is called Taming Your Alpha Bitch, How to Be Fierce and Feminine and Get Everything You Want. Do you have everything you want?
I do. I have a really wonderful life, and it really is. You know, I had to tame my own inner alpha bitch because it wasn't working in my life. And I really came from a place where I didn't have anything in my life. I have my ideal body. I've got a wonderful French-Canadian husband who we live in Montreal with our two wonderful boys, Maxim and Alex. I have a fantastic career where I get to empower men and women all over the world. And I really have a sense of fulfillment and inner peace. So, and it really is applying the information that Rebecca and I have brought to this book over a decade of working. And, you know, she's a therapist of 25 years. I'm a coach of 10 years and, an author in my own right. And we're just, applying the information that we've seen that so many women have been pulled off and been able to not create what they want. And I've applied it to my life and really have created life of my dreams.
You mentioned balance. That's one of the things that people talk about in terms of women that they don't really talk about in men, and that is the balance of professional versus personal life.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's so important, not even just in our professional and personal lives, in our daily lives. What do? You know, are we drinking too much caffeine and we're out of balance? Are we living life from an all-or-nothing perspective? Because that'll exhaust us. It'll deplete us and exhaust us. But if you put life in balance, that's when you can find, you know, connection. That's when you can find that life really is fulfilling.
The book is called Taming Your Alpha Bitch, How to Be Fierce and Feminine and Get Everything You Want. I thank you very, very much, Christy, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you so much, Peter. Thanks, everybody.
Christy Whitman, co-author of Taming Your Alpha Bitch, How to Be Fierce and Feminine and Get Everything You Want. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0127, and you'll find links to Christy's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the founder of the Museum of Clean. Plus, we have another edition of Book Banter with Stuart Nullman. And, of course, there will indeed be an idiot of the day. But right now, more Stuff File news for your listening pleasure. Move over, Angry Birds. Here comes the Angry Brides. It's a new online game in India that is attracting hundreds of thousands of fans on Facebook. Inspired by Angry Birds, the Free Brides game seeks to highlight the problem of illegal dowry demands in India. In Angry Brides, players attack prospective grooms greedy for dowry payments with a variety of weapons from a red brick stiletto to a broomstick. The three grooms, an engineer, a doctor, and a pilot, dodge the attacks while demanding dowries starting at 1.5 million rupees. Paying and accepting a dowry in India has been illegal since 1961, but the tradition of the bride's parents presenting gifts of cash, clothes, jewelry, even appliances to the groom's family still happens all the time. Wow. Angry Brides the game. I think I'll wait for the movie. Meanwhile, apparently there's a strange new custom among new brides in Brazil. A growing number of new brides are walking down the aisle with nothing on underneath their wedding dress, stemming from the belief that this will somehow make their marriages last longer. Well, we'll make the honeymoon last longer anyway. Legislator Ozias Zizi, there's a lot of Zs in that guy's name, of the Brazilian Republican Party has deemed this totally unacceptable and is now proposing a new law which would not only force new brides to put on some undergarments, but also limit how low their necklines can go on their wedding dresses. He claims the latter part will also help spare ministers embarrassment, but at least one pastor, Enoch de Castro, called the bill ridiculous, saying, "It would be an absurd thing to try to have to police something like this to find out whether a bride is wearing knickers or not." Well, bottoms up. And while we're on the topic of underwear, Zimbabwe may have an 80% unemployment rate, but one thing the country absolutely won't stand for is its poor and starving citizens wearing used underwear. The country's finance minister, Tendai Biti, recently announced a total ban on the importation and sale of secondhand underwear. I didn't even know there was a market for that, but anyway. Biti told reporters, "If you are a husband and you see your wife buying underwear from the flea market, you would have failed. If I was your in-law, I would take my daughter and urge you to first put your house in order if you still want her back." Wow. It is believed the ban will help address health concerns as well as work to protect the country's domestic textile industry. Zimbabwe currently ranks among the poorest countries in the world. Sounds like the finance minister has his knickers in a knot. Meanwhile, the Iraqi government is demanding that a former security guard return a bronze buttock that he seized from Saddam Hussein's statue, which was famously pulled down on international TV during the initial American invasion of Baghdad. Remember that big statue? It was in all the news. Anyway, 52-year-old Nigel Ely was guarding a camera crew in April of 2003 as they filmed Iraqis pulling down the giant statue in Baghdad. He picked up a 2-foot lump of bronze that had formed part of the tyrant's backside and brought it back to the UK. The Iraqi government now claims the metal chunk is a piece of the country's cultural antiquity and is demanding he return it or face possible theft charges. He has turned the buttock into an artwork and says that makes him its legal owner, adding, "When I got it, it was just a piece of scrap metal. I am only doing this to raise money for military charities. If the Iraqis want to split the proceeds to give some to Iraqi charities, I am happy to listen." Wow, fighting over Saddam Hussein's ass. Oh, the irony. And speaking about butts, in a bizarre money-making scheme, a New Zealand woman is auctioning off advertising space on her bottom. No kidding. Tina Besnick says the winning bidder can choose whatever design he or she wants tattooed on a 3.5-inch square on her behind. Believe it or not, the auction listing has gone viral and has attracted more than 170,000 hits and bids of more than $2,500. Tina says she will give 20% of the proceeds to charity, adding, "I'm just trusting the winner of the auction will not do anything too stupid. I think it's amazing that, you know, it's gone global, gone viral over the internet. So yeah, it's awesome." Yeah. She doesn't want anybody to do anything too stupid. Oh, again, irony. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the program, one thing you can say about Indonesia, they've got balls. Big grapefruit-sized concrete balls, and they plan to use them to stop commuters from illegally riding on the roofs of trains. Officials are now suspending rows of the concrete balls capable of delivering a very serious blow to the head over railway lines, increasing numbers of passengers illegally hopping onto the roofs of train cars and catching free rides have spawned the aggressive action. The first dozen or so balls were installed dangling from posts hundreds of yards from the entrance of a train station just outside the capital, Jakarta. I've seen pictures of this now, and since finding this story for the Stuff File News, I've seen an update to the story which mentions that they've put this up there, but the balls are dangling just a little too high, so people are still sneaking under them, so they plan to lower them. This is sort of like a very realistic, sad, hard-knock version of the television series Wipeout. Anyway, much as I would like to think that this is an ideal plan in a Wile E. Coyote kind of way, to remove those who ride for free in the Western world, this would just be a massive lawsuit waiting to happen. All it needs to do is hit one person. One person. And the lawyers will be lining up. Just lining up. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Don Aslett recently opened the Museum of Clean in Pocatello, Idaho, as the culmination of a lifelong devotion to tidying up. Highlights are several hundred pre-electric vacuum cleaners, plus interactive exhibits to encourage kids to clean their rooms and more. Don joins us on the line right now. Hi, Don.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, you've been involved in kind of tidying up for a while. What is your business, or primarily?
Well, I was raised on a farm in southern Idaho and learned that cleaning was the neatest thing to be. The corrals were clean, the machinery was clean, the yards were clean, everything was good, and the parents loved you. So when I went to college at Idaho State University, I put an ad in the paper, Don Aslett, professional cleaner. I'd never even made my bed before. We had outdoor toilets when I left there, but people started to call me. I started washing walls and cleaning out furnaces and doing everything as a college student. I hired one student, two, 20, 30, 100, and all the way through college, I cleaned businesses and houses, you know, and homes and stores and airports, anything that you could clean a toilet. Anything that had a toilet, Peter, it had a floor. You know, I cleaned it. And then when I graduated from college, I had bought a home and had a family. We had six children in 7 years. And so I had a business in three states by the time I finished college. And so I stayed in the business, Peter. I'm now 76. I've been 58 years a professional cleaner. I'm just like a dentist. We both work in enamels, you know, type thing. So I really love cleaning. I love how it changes life. And clean is really, really a hard sell. You know, people punish their kids with it. Like, you know, you little snot behavior, you're going to clean your room. Professors punish their students. Say, you know, you kids either are study or you're going to grow up and be a janitor. So I don't know. I was at a museum, and that's what I just asked you pre to this, that about the museums there, but I was in a museum in Detroit, I think, and I saw a pre-electric sweeper, Peter, in 1890, and I go, man, there's cow museums, horse museums, plane museums, train museums. Why not a clean museum? The most important factor in Earth is clean for the environment, for the people. And I'm talking about clean air, clean water, clean language, clean sheets, clean toilets. And so I started collecting cleaning things, Peter, and basically I got an old pump, hand pump vacuum and then an old heater and tubs and some old washers, and I started collecting and then got at eBay, flea markets, antique stores, and now I've probably got 6,000 items. I started that in about 84. Now, as you said before, we have a 4,000-pound horse-drawn vacuum in our museum. We have all sorts of everything that you can imagine. But the big surprise is we have a beautiful cleaning art gallery, Peter. Believe this or not, just an unbelievable art gallery that every picture is something to do with clean. So when people come, they're pretty surprised to see that.
Well, let me ask you this. You've been collecting this stuff for years and years and years, and you've now opened up the Museum of Clean. But before you opened up the museum, where did you keep all this stuff?
Well, I own a ranch, and I own a farm, and I own a couple city blocks in Pocatello, and I had some big warehouses and everything. So we just stored. Good question. Everybody's interested in that because everybody's got a lot of stuff and a lot of things to store. But these things were valuable. One thing in my collection, Peter, in fact, the guy's name was Peter Fry out of Boston, had collected vacuums, and he had all of the, he had 250 pre-electrics, beautiful pieces he collected his whole lifetime with all the patents and all the brochures and everything with it. And I wrote him a check for $300,000. That's how serious I am about that. And I got that collection. It's absolutely, people are stunned when they see it. Of course, this isn't a vacuum museum. It's a clean museum. But, the vacuums, Peter, help vehicle it. And so we store the stuff in another warehouse, and as we put it out on the floor, we have a restoration room. We fix it up, or we paint it, or we label it and document it and put it out on the floor. And we have the museum open. And people are pretty odd.
With the addition of old material, old cleaning products, do you also keep up to date with what's going on, and do you keep or do you include things that are brand spanking new as far as the cleaning world is concerned? For instance, right now, people are talking about the Swiffer sweepers or the Dyson vacuums. Do you have things like that in your museum as well?
Oh, yes. Good question, Peter. You're really right. Today, anything that sells clean is in the museum. Everything doesn't have to be old. A bunch of old antiques aren't that great. So, for instance, we have a Clean World, a big globe about 30 foot big round. Looks like a cage fighter or a motorcycle cage globe, three stories. And there's a yellow brick road going into it, and the kids come into that. The first thing they do, we have a giant 9-horsepower vacuum in the basement, and the kids get in this cookie cutter thing, and it vacuums the kids off, almost sucks their little ribbons off their hair. And then they go into another place, and they recycle, and they do some sweeping, and they do windows, and they go up this trail into this whole thing where they learn to make beds and learn to do things. And it's all modern. We're trying to teach them to obey their parents and to be very safe. And there's a place we weigh kids. There's a place we have a little movie. And we have a garage, for instance, that is just unbelievable, full of stuff. And we push a button, and the door goes up, and the people all name what they have. And the winner always gets a book. And so we enforce the modern-day problem of too much stuff, too much clutter, too much even good stuff. We have a place that we show people what it is and what to do with it and everything. So, yeah, we do. We keep up modern. We show them how vacuums work and why you ought to clean and what disinfectant ought to do, and along with the history.
How long has the museum been open, and are you surprised by the attention it's getting?
Well, it's been open, of course, in 85 when we first started it in my corporate office. We had a small museum, five or six little rooms, and then we bought the big 80,000-square-foot building, the six-story buildings, and put everything in it, and it's being a LEED or platinum, an energy building, so it's drawn a lot of attention. But clean is a hard sell, but, Peter, people are into sports and cars and food and sex and technology and everything, and clean is way down at the bottom. But if you take something at the bottom and make it funny and make it appealing, it goes to the top. In fact, I went through Canada several times. I've written 40 books on cleaning, and I've done probably 6,000 television and radio shows and ones like yours. And I found out if you had a slant of cleaning that's different, people were really interested because everybody has to clean. So it's getting a lot of interest. And about a month ago, Associated Press, which I'm sure you picked this up on Associated Press, came and interviewed me, and I've been got calls from all over the world, London, Everybody's interested in clean. If it's another slant in a museum, it's certainly a cleaning museum. What would you see at a cleaning museum? But everybody comes all say, this is snort. You know, this is really fun.
Now, the thing is, a lot of people go with the unfortunate stereotype that, you know, it's the women who do the cleaning and the guys who just kind of sit around and do not much. But at the museum, who's the clientele? Is it mostly men or mostly women or both?
Well, it's mostly children and both. You know, I start in my third book was a book called Who Says It's a Woman's Job to Clean. The whole book was pointed to get men to do a lot of cleaning. So at the museum, it's just about even now, men and women, because, you know, there's big macho machines in there and there's everything. So I even have one section has men's or women's or, you know, cleaning tools converted into men's. Like I have a roller on a rifle and a Porsche gear shift handle on a hotcake turner and, you know, a golf club on a duster and a saw handle on an iron, and people get offended, but we're given the message that it's everyone's to clean. And one thing we have going, Peter, is that we have puppet shows and we have melodramas. We're going to have some this Friday about cleaning. Now, who'd ever think you'd see a puppet show about cleaning, but the little puppet comes out and talks to the kids. You kids clean your room? You don't make your mom clean the room, do you? And the little kids just eat it up, you know. And then so the one stress of the museum is trying to get men to put the toilet seat up and, you know, and all the type of thing like that. So good question. We have that in the museum. And it is not a woman's job to clean. You know, it's the guy that makes the mess should pick up the mess.
Well, since you are so much into cleaning and you've collected all this stuff that goes through literally the generations of cleaning, in your estimation, what has been the most important innovation in cleaning in the last 150 years?
Well, I think you just brought it up before. I think you're way ahead of your question there. I think getting that it's everybody's job to clean, that the planet is our responsibility, that has never been. You know, it's always been a woman's job, and I think now it's been that tools fit a man's hands and everybody else's hands, and litter is our problem. It isn't the government's problem. It isn't the president's problem. It isn't your problem as a famous newscaster or anything else. It's our problem, and I think the biggest innovation that we're starting to individualize cleaning. For example, we started, I don't know if this is in Canada or America, we have signs that say adopt a highway. Do you have adopt a highway?
Yes.
And I spoke at Keep America Beautiful a thing, and I said, I think that's really stupid, because if we clean up behind people, we reinforce bad behavior. You know, so all those signs I see, I'm putting a big thing in front, adopt a habit. And I think, to answer your question, teaching people it's our job to clean up behind ourselves at work, at home, and anything else is the single biggest innovation that it's not a woman's job to clean. It's taken a long time, because even in the 30s and 40s and 50s, every ad had the women doing the vacuum. And they'd say, oh, this is my wife's washing machine. I got my wife a new refrigerator. Do you know what I'm saying? So I think that's the biggest innovation since the history of man. I mean, women carried water in 1909, a quarter of a mile with those neck yokes and everything to feed the house. And people see this in the museum, and they're just, some people are really appalled, but they like where we're going. And that's one purpose of the museum, Peter, is to educate people that it's all our job to clean. If people at work, and everybody listens to this, if you work cleaned up after yourself and everything, you cut the janitor bills 30%, and you could cut all the chemicals needed and the energy needed to clean. If people just cleaned up behind themselves and even straightened their motel room up when they left, you know, all that would be unbelievable how that would affect the generations of the environment and of time.
Well, I was just about to say it's not only a fascinating display, but as you just mentioned, it's an education in itself. It's the Museum of Clean, and it's in Pocatello, Idaho. And Don, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, I love you Canadians. You guys are clean up there. When I used to tour across Canada with all my 40 books, I would go across there. The studios were clean, which is not always there. In America, and the streets were clean, and I mean the Canadians are just clean. So I don't know if there's a museum of clean in Canada, but I'll sure share mine in Idaho with you.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome.
Don Aslett, founder of the Museum of Clean in Pocatello, Idaho. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0127, and you'll find links to the museum's website. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. How many times have you been robbed by a convicted felon? You may be surprised to learn you've been robbed more often than you think. Even if you've never been held up by a thief, There are probably prisoners who are robbing you as a taxpayer right now. Convicted criminals behind bars file a shocking number of frivolous lawsuits every year, and often for the silliest reasons. One inmate filed a lawsuit because he was mad that prison officials touched his hair. He said his dreadlocks were sacred, and believe it or not, a jury awarded him $1 in this lawsuit. Let's be fair, we shouldn't be as concerned about the $1 as we are about all the money we have to spend to fight these lawsuits. Several years ago, Congress passed a law to crack down on frivolous lawsuits in federal prisons, but only 16 states have done something similar. Now, lawmakers in Nebraska are trying to make their state the 17th to do so. Where does your state stand? Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And in the dark and cold of another winter where the nights come quicker, we have another edition of Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Ooh, scary. Very scary. Hello, Stuart.
Hello, Mr. Sterling. I mean, Mr. Holder. all of this, you know, just need that da-na-na-na-na-na-na playing. But, you know, on this edition of Book Banter, Peter, I mean, my birthday is coming up. In fact, it's, coming up very soon. And I'm going to be 49, actually, the big 4-9.
Ooh.
I was born in 63.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But speaking of 19, why am I mentioning 1963? Because, as a clever segue that we always do, this edition of Book Banter deals with a book about 1963. And one of my favorite authors, Stephen King. It's his latest novel called 112263. Now, there's an overlying message that constantly pervades Stephen King's latest magnum opus, which is called 112263, that the past is obdurate. In case you know what that means, it means life with what is one of the most engrossing, readable novels in a very long time. The story centers around Jake Epping, a high school English teacher in Lisbon Falls, Maine. He is sent on an unusual mission by his friend Al Templeton, the owner-proprietor of the local diner, famous for its fat burger. It's a travel back in time to prevent the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in Dallas on November 22nd of 1963. Now, when he's ready to travel back in time to Dallas, Jake, or his alter ego George Amberson, doesn't do the obvious and gets plunked down into the middle of Dallas just hours before JFK's assassination. Instead, he once again returns to Maine in 1958 and travels to Texas via Boston and Florida in a Ford Sunliner automobile and follow Al's notes to the letter in order to follow Lee Harvey Oswald's tracks in Texas during that five-year period in order to stop him from killing the president. You see, Al is a firm believer in the Warren Commission's lone gunman theory. So while Jake slash George follows the events leading up to that fateful Friday afternoon in Dallas, he settles himself in the nearby Texas town of Jody and quickly becomes a model citizen there. He becomes a popular substitute English teacher and drama club director at the local high school, garners the respect of his fellow faculty members and many of its students, and even gets himself a girlfriend. However, outside his school involvement, Jake slash George, Oswald's movements and whereabouts, renting apartments in the buildings in Fort Worth and Dallas, where Oswald would make his home in these two locales with his Russian wife Marina and his baby daughter June, and using a homemade listening device, years ahead of its time, finds out what his beliefs and motives are that would compel him to assassinate Kennedy. But what I think makes 112263 such a thrilling read is its unpredictability as a result of Jake slash George's time travel mission to change history. King is not solely satisfied with how his protagonist accomplishes the mission. And as well, it gives us a what-if portrait of American and world history that transpires as a result of that mission. And the results are both shocking and horrifying in its literary exercise of hypothetical history. In my opinion, 112263 will rank as one of King's best novels since he's decided to revive the 19th century concept of the novel as literary serial with The Green Mile back in 1996. He has such an uncanny ability to make the ordinary so frightening, and soberly states that sometimes changing the past is not always for the better, and that the past is indeed stubbornly obdurate.
Do you think that, is there a possibility, a chance, that maybe Stephen King himself is from the future?
Well, you may never know. I mean, who knows what he could predict, actually. But the man, I mean, he's such a talented, multifaceted author. I mean, he doesn't just stick to horror novels. He likes to dabble in things that fascinate him. And he researched this book for about almost 40 years before he started writing. He's a big JFK assassination junkie. So a lot of his this book is very well researched, actually. But if you like Stephen King and the multifaceted talents of Stephen King, what I recommend, these are for me his my favorite books of his. You should read The Stand, excellent book. The Shining, Carrie, and Misery, and which deals with the hazards of being a very popular best-selling author. And the movies just as terrific too. So, and he's written so many books. I mean, there's so much to choose from, but those are my favorites. If you really want to read a little bit, if this is your first King book, got to read these right after.
Bring Stephen King books, but you're also talking about his new one. Yeah. Based on his new book, are there any other books you would suggest for someone who wants to delve into time travel?
Well, there's always, you know, you go back to the classic, The Time Machine by H.G. Wells, which was sort of the granddaddy of time travel books. Or if even if you want to, you know, go even further, there's always Kinetic Yankee and King Arthur's Court by Mark Twain, which was a good movie with Bing Crosby. It was done in 1949. So go with the classics. You can't go wrong with that.
Do you realize that you've been on Book Hunter with the Stuff File program only twice now in the year 2012?
Yeah.
And both times you've brought up Bing Crosby. Do you think you're going to do Bing through the entire year? Is that the theme of 2012 for you on Book Banter?
Well, could be the year of the Bing. You may never know.
That's what Microsoft would like to believe.
But, hey, you know what? You may have given me a little bit of a little project to do, actually.
There you go. So the book is, Stephen King's new book is called?
11-22-63. It's published by Scribner, and it's $39.99.
And how can people get in contact with you?
Well, you can read me in the West End Times every week, and you can also read it online at www.westendtimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stuart. And by the way, happy birthday.
Well, thank you. I think I'll go back a couple of years and see which birthday was the best one. But okay. Yeah, thank you very much, Peter.
Stuart Nullman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're in the home stretch of this edition of the Stuff File program. Idiot of the Day coming up in just a matter of moments, but we do have some more Stuff File news stories to get to share with you for your listening pleasure. A recent release from the U.S. Center for Disease Control and printed in the Wall Street Journal is warning citizens of the dangers of Campylobacter jejuni bacteria infections, which showed up on a sheep ranch. Now, the good news is the infections only showed up among workers who used an old 19th century method of castrating the animals. As a result, the CDC strongly urged that workers immediately stop biting off the sheep's genitals and instead use more modern and sterile tools. The fact that somebody is still doing this 19th century method in the 21st century is actually quite disturbing. You think they were doing it just for kicks? Anyway, you might have trouble deciding if this is terribly touching or terribly sick and wrong. In Thailand, a man has married his dead girlfriend in what was described as a joint funeral and wedding ceremony. Deaf Ying Yin placed a ring on the finger of Serena Ann Kamsuk, his girlfriend of 10 years. The couple had planned to get married in the future, but Def wanted to focus on his studies before tying the knot. Anne unexpectedly died in an accident before the couple could set a date. At the funeral, Anne was laid out on a table in a white dress with flowers in her hair. Def held her hand through the wedding portion of the funeral and placed a wedding ring on her finger. Friends said the bizarre ceremony was both touching and an amazing testament to Def's love for Anne. This story might have given you the warm and fuzzies. All I can simply say is, ick. And birdwatchers in New Zealand thought they were experiencing a birdwatcher's dream, discovering a new species of a feathered friend. In this case, it was a never-before-seen breed of hawk that was pink. While excitement built among the group of bird devotees, their joy was soon shot down when one of the birds was hit by a car and thus was able to be examined up close. Turns out a local farmer, Grant Tian, had been painting the hawks pink for fun. So he was arrested and found guilty in a district court on two charges of ill-treating animals. He's due to be sentenced on January 30th. Local SPCA manager Danny Auger said it was the most bizarre case he had ever worked on. Seriously, who punks bird watchers? That's what I want to know. Okay, if you listen to this program often enough, you know one of the things that really drives me nuts are zero-tolerance rules, usually the ones that are in schools. They go way too far in protecting kids, and all it does is get other kids who otherwise might not get in trouble into trouble. I've got basically several here. After a 9-year-old was suspended for supposed sexual harassment for referring to a teacher as cute, this is a 9-year-old I'm repeating here, a 9-year-old, the Gaston County, North Carolina School District said the superintendent had a formal apology for student Emmanuel Lockett and his parents, and the suspension has been stricken from the boy's record. Then the district gave Brookside Elementary School principal Jerry Bostick 1 hour to decide, quit or be fired. One mistake in 44 years and I'm not even given the benefit of the doubt, Bostick complained. I really don't believe I was treated fairly. He chose to retire, presumably with a full pension. Oh, sure. Now he wants to talk about what's fair. Yeah. And Michael Davis, age five, sometimes gets into fights at Rio Calaveras Elementary School in Stockton, California, which his mother, Thelma Gray, blames on attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. She says the school came up with a plan. A police officer could come out and talk to Michael, and the kids are normally scared straight, Gray said. Now, in his report of the meeting, Lieutenant Frank Gordo admits he touched Michael and the boy, quote, pushed my hand away in a batting motion, pushed papers off the table, and kicked me in the right knee. After failing to calm the boy he was supposed to scare straight, Gordo zip-tied the 5-year-old's hands and feet, charged him with battery of a police officer, and hauled him off to a psychiatric hospital. Did I mention he was 5? Yeah. And he did all this, by the way, without consulting the parents first. A juvenile court judge dismissed the criminal charge, and a grand jury and the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights are investigating the incident. Maybe someday Michael will become a judge and scare cops straight. And Albuquerque, New Mexico authorities were summoned to the Cleveland Middle School by a school resource officer to make an arrest for interfering with public education, court papers show. Responding officers did in fact make the arrest, the criminal, a 7th grader, whose teachers were displeased that he had burped audibly. Yes, really. The unnamed student's family have filed a civil rights lawsuit against the school in which the boy complains of being strip searched in an earlier incident when he had been suspected of selling pot. He wasn't charged in that case. Now, last year, says Shannon Kennedy, the boy's attorney, she won a class action settlement with Albuquerque police over arrest of minors. That case was started by a girl who was arrested for not wanting to sit next to a stinky boy in class. Wow. If I were a kid, I'd be more concerned about sitting in a stinky police department's jurisdiction. But I digress. Anyway, time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff I present, the idiot of the day.
23-year-old Stephanie Morris got herself a bad case of instant karma. She stupidly reported that someone had broken into her Kansas City apartment and stole $900. In fact, that was true. Problem was, it was only part of the $3,522 that Morris herself has now been charged with stealing from the Girl Scouts. And it was cookie money. The state charged Morris, the leader of Girl Scout Troop Number 8705, with felony stealing from the troop's bank account. Gina Garvin, a spokeswoman for the Girl Scouts of Northwest Kansas and Northwest Missouri, said, "It's disappointing that we had to file a criminal complaint. Court documents indicate that the defendant confessed that she's raising a niece and fell behind in paying bills." Wow. Stealing Girl Guide cookie money. That's not just a low move. That also makes you, Stephanie Morris,
an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0127. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's program number 0127. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show. On the air, online, or as a download, we're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.